Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan
and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
All right, 5:40 on a Saturday afternoon in New York. We tried to get Mike Vaccaro last week, but he's traveling all over the country because he's a big timer and he goes to all the big events. And you know, he can't deal with the little people every weekend. So we got him this weekend, and we're happy about that. Mike, of course, a great columnist from The Post. Michael, how are we this afternoon?
Just call me Gulliver, Chris.
Yes, I understand your travels are out there. Did you have a good weekend? Where'd you go, from Vegas to Miami?
Actually, from Los Angeles. So
Los Angeles.
To do some Kobe Bryant columns, so yeah.
And then on to Miami. Witnessed a pretty good game.
That was a great game, wasn't it?
I mean,
it was, it's one of those games where it's just so much fun to write about. And, it's fun to watch, obviously, but, from my standpoint, it's a lot more fun to write about a game like that than a 42-7 game.
Plus, you know, it's all about the athletes and the strategies, and it's all about the things we like talking about, not what we have here in New York, where it's, it's Dolan and it's Wilpon and it's Cohen and it's Hinch and, the Astros and the Red Sox cheating and all. Just, it's not about what we see on the field. It was sort of a nice contrast for me in talking about it during the Open today, about what we want and what we get. What we want is what we saw last weekend, is all kinds of strategy and second-guessing and marveling at Mahomes' talent and, all kinds of Andy Reid's story. And there, as you say, so many great storylines and all about why we're a sports fan, all good reasons. Today I opened the show, and I want to get your opinion. I opened the show talking about the erosion of trust and how it's sort of tasteless and colorless and odorless and invisible. But when you can't trust what you're watching, as we found out with the Astros and didn't get the satisfying answers from Hinch last night and just feel grubbier and grubbier about it, it really is a downer. It's really a bummer. And it's not tangible. You can't put a price on it. But I want to know, what your thoughts are about damage done when you start to question what you're watching, which is something, by the way, we didn't do at all last Sunday when we watched that Super Bowl.
Well, I think that's the reason why it's always important, like a day like today when Pete Rose becomes part of the news again because the president supports his Hall of Fame candidacy, which is certainly a viable opinion, whether you agree with it or not. But, a lot of times people like to dismiss what Pete Rose was suspended for as well. How bad was it really? Well, it was bad because he was a manager in baseball and was betting on his team. And more importantly, there were days when he wasn't betting on his team, which sends an even louder message to those who are paying attention. And, that's the entire year that Rose was managing the Reds, you really couldn't trust the outcome of those games to be completely on the level. And, I actually wrote a column for tomorrow just kind of, referencing this, the 70th anniversary of CCNY. And for a long time, basketball at the Garden was destroyed, college basketball for sure, because people had lost that faith. People had lost that trust. It's essential. You have to believe that what you're watching isn't predetermined. That's part of why sports.
So, Mike, to interrupt, my question really is, is it still essential? Does this generation or does this people on the planet right now in America who feel like they're lied to a lot in business, in politics, in government, in sports, are they shoulder shruggers now where they just accept the fact that it's not going to be on the up and up? Or are they angry?
I think they're angry. Especially when you have a dog in the hunt. Look, we make fun of Yankees fans and how, it's hard to have sympathy for their outrage by what the Astros did to them, certainly in 2017, and, certainly through some anecdotal evidence in 2019. But you know what? They were robbed. They were. If the Astros are cheating, I'm not saying the Yankees would have won if everything was on the level, but we'll never know.
We'll never know. That's exactly right.
And to me, that's the real tragedy of it. And that's when it's all related, whether you're talking about gambling, whether you're talking about cheating, sign stealing, whether you're talking about steroids, certainly after a time when there was a policy in place, it's if you can't believe the results that you're watching, then, over time that does erode, it does, boxing, I think part of the reason why boxing has lost so much of its popularity is that there were decades where you just there was probably when it seemed like every other boxing match was called into question because of this or that suspicion going on behind the scenes with that match, and that's what happens. And to me, I mean, look, it's, you know, there's nothing better than a great upset victory in sports, or, you know, even a great team that's able to sustain itself over the course of a long season. But, you know, part of the reason why that's all built on such a strong foundation is people believe in what they see, and when that erodes over time, you got a real problem. I really believe that, and I do think it exists. I do think there's anger now. I get what you're saying about the way that we've kind of been beaten down.
Yeah, I just wonder whether you agree with me that the bar has been lowered, that we expect so much less across the board because we've been burned too many times. That's my fear, and that's what I wanted to get your opinion on.
I guess the way I put it is that nothing surprises us anymore.
Right.
I still think. Like, I mean, maybe I'm just speaking to somebody who is bothered by it, but I still think people are bothered by, you know, whenever there's an intrusion on their games. You know, I mean, the fact that what you were talking about at the top with me here, I mean, you know, one of the great things about watching the Super Bowl is you're able to talk just about the stuff on the field. It was a great game. Let's talk about the game.
And the thought entered your mind, right?
Right.
I mean, that's important. It's important that you never for a second did you think, oh, this game's fixed, or this game, you know, somebody got paid off, or they saw their playbook last night. They know what's coming. That thought not entering your mind is really valuable.
Which is one of the reasons why it was probably a blessing that the Patriots are nowhere near the Super
right,
Bowl.
Forget the
fact that we all have Patriots fatigue. The fact is that, you know, at least for as long as this coach is going to be part of the team, you know, whenever they show up at a big game, there's always, you know, it sometimes it's presented as a joke, you know, like, you know, what kind of cloak and dagger stuff is going on here. But it's really not funny because, I mean, frankly, at least half of the Patriots' Super Bowl wins are called into question because of their tactics. And it's terrible that we feel that way because they really should be celebrated universally as one of the best football teams of all time, if not the best football team of all time. And yet it's hard to embrace that because of the shenanigans that always seem to be a part of what they do.
How big a deal is Hinch's non-answer last night to the buzzer question in your mind?
I think it's a huge deal because, to me, I mean, I think one of the things that we've discovered about A.J. Hinch is that he has a hard time lying. I mean, he's kind of what he does, you know, we saw this, you know, during the postseason when he kind of just dismissed the whole whistling notion when they were talking about science going that way without actually saying, you know. And here, I mean, I get that, you know, it does call into question that, you know, a guy like this would probably, especially where he is now, would probably have totally dismissed it if he thought he could dismiss it, but didn't feel like he could do so if he wanted to be completely, you know, honest with himself. So it does, you know, at the very least, you have to question that. It's something you get. Something else you attach to this whole storyline.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think it was a really big deal. I just think it was like, wow, this is as bad as everybody said it was, and wow, I still don't know how it all is going to play out. I don't know how they're going to be reacted to. I'm a little fascinated by it, and I'm hoping you're right and I'm wrong, that people are angrier than I perceive them to be, because I think they should be. I think you and I are in agreement that they should be pretty angry about this, given how orchestrated it was and how continuous it was and how many people had to have known and decided to keep their mouth shut. I think that all of those things, when you pile them into a case, make it very, very difficult to have a lot of sympathy here. What do we make of the Mets situation right now?
Well, I mean, it's kind of quintessential Mets, isn't it? I mean, you know, I mean, it's when you look at the, and I wrote this for tomorrow's papers. It's interesting. Last month, we just discovered that the star left fielder, who, you know, is getting half the salary taken away from him, got hurt because he was attacked by a wild boar.
Yeah,
and that's the third most crazy storyline going into spring training, going into pitchers and catchers. You know, they lost a manager who never managed a game. And this ownership situation, you know, and forgetting that Steve Cohen didn't get the team, and I know it's going to be a disappointment to Mets fans because they had visions of him being, you know, kind of a Steinbrenner 2.0.
Yeah, free spender.
With his vast fortune. But, you know, if the consolation prize is that the Wilpons still plan to win, just still plan to sell, well, you got to figure that this 5-year thing is going to be part of all future sales. And what moron who is smart enough to be able to build a fortune big enough to buy the Mets is going to actually agree to that. I just, it's bizarre. Why is it that when teams get bought and sold all the time? Why is it the Mets, where the stipulation has to be put in, where the lame duck owner has to allow his son to be able to have the same? It's unprecedented. Why does it have to be the Mets that invents this? That's what I think you have to ask yourself, you know, if you care about the Mets.
Absolutely. And I think people are, but they don't have any way to answer the question. Do you believe they're in financial straits?
I believe there's a motivation among some people with the ownership group to sell. Saul Katz specifically, I think he's grown tired of all the ancillary stuff. I don't think he likes, if you can cash out, why wouldn't you? I think there's a lot of people involved in the Wilpon and Katz families who want the liquid here and want to be done with the relentless, you know, debt services and financial burdens the Mets have become. I mean, there's no question that they still have a lot of debt. They're still paying through their teeth, to the debt services, and that's a hard way to live, especially if you're going to try and live in the New York City market in a sport without a salary cap.
And yet, if they were desperate, as you said, then Wilpon would just back out and say, "Here's the team. I'm out. Here's your team." So that just, you know, you can't have both to me. If you're in financial straits, then don't put stipulations in about how you have to stay. If you're not, right, then don't sell the team. So it's driving everybody crazy.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. Look, I mean, and the thing that's especially cruel, especially, you know, we live in an era, I think, more than ever, where the owners are brought under a glaring spotlight, you know, and it's, you know, we have to sell the team chance at the Garden, and you know, a lot of people aren't happy with the Johnsons, with the Jets, and with Maron, Tisch, with the Giants, and you know, it's interesting that, you know, Mets fans are granted this like 2 month respite where they actually, you know, whether it's fair or not, and fans when they yell at the owner selling the team, they actually had 2 months where they thought that they'd gotten their wish, and then it was taken away from them, and I think that's why they're angry. You know, it's like, it doesn't affect this year's team probably hardly at all. I mean, I think it was,
right,
you know, if you're excited about this team, you're going to stay excited. If you had questions about this team, those questions still exist. It's just the long-term feeling you have for the team. And I think that, you know, Mets fans are actually, you know, that's how bizarre this five-year waiting period thing was. It, I think Mets fans are perfectly fine with that, just as long as they knew there was a time when there was going to be a new direction. And, you know, that obviously vanished this week.
Mike Vaccaro, The Post, joining us here on The Fan. Chris Moore on a Saturday afternoon. We've got a couple more minutes with Mike, and then we'll let him go. You can read his columns tomorrow in The Post on these things. I was asked the other day, maybe it was last night, why does Dolan sit in the crowd like that when he knows he is going to bring the animosity out toward him and that it's nothing new, and yet he still sits in that same spot? A reasonable question. What are your thoughts?
I don't think, look at me, he's obviously, this stuff obviously bothers him, but I also think that, you know, he likes, you know, kind of the defiant part of it. This is my party, this is my team, this is my toy, you know, try and take it away from me, you know. I mean, he kind of unnecessarily, you know, on Wednesday, I think it was, you know, the days kind of blend together in this market with all the crazy stories, whatever it was that it emerged that, he's going in a different direction with Leon Rose. You know, in his statement, he said, "I'm not selling the team." Well, no kidding. Obviously, you're not. I mean, you made that point abundantly clear. So I think it's that kind of like, oh, by the way, guess who I am kind of thing that probably, you know, leads him out there all the time. And look, I mean, you know, not for nothing, but he's generally sitting in those seats flanked by a couple of beautiful friends.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, it's almost a reminder that, you know, I'm James Dolan and you're not.
Right,
You know, I have $2 billion to my name and you don't. And, you know, and honestly, I mean, you know, and I actually wrote this last year, Chris, if I were Jim Dolan, that's how I would live my life. You can chant all you want. You can come up to me and tell me what a terrible owner I am, and I, you know, just kind of look around and say, "Guess what? This is my house."
Yeah, that's right.
And I just wouldn't listen. I mean, to me, I think he would come across better to the fans if we would laugh off the chance. I really do. I think that would infuriate Knicks fans less that if, you know, he was sending security guards after teenagers who, you know, just happened to be a little louder than the rest of the chanters.
You know, and it comes back to, Mike, to just the monopoly atmosphere of all these leagues, and we're seeing it here because we're unhappy with our owners, and people are saying, you know, the league's got to do something about the Wilpons, and what's this, you know, this Jeff Wilpon staying on, and, you know, it makes them look bad and all this. And you know, they're just not forced by anybody to do anything, and it's very hard for the fan to understand that. The Maras can stay, the Johnsons can stay, the Wilpons can stay, Dolan can stay. With their, you know, they look at the fan base basically as addicted, and that there isn't anything that they can do to get you to say, I'm not watching them anymore. That's how they look at it, and basically they've been proven right, no?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, whenever you have a week like this or a time like this, I get a lot of, you know, emails from readers who say, you know, if Mets fans had any self-respect, they would boycott the team. If Knicks fans had a brain in their heads, they would boycott the team. Well, you know what? Here's the dirty little secret about sports. Sports fans love their teams far more than they hate the owners who destroy those teams. And that's the way it is. That's the way it's always been. That's the reason why, you know, fan boycotts don't work. They just because fans, you know, fans are denying themselves more than anything else if they don't allow themselves to care about the team.
Exactly right.
You know, if you're a baseball fan. I mean, like a game by game, day by day, live and die baseball fan. Denying yourself baseball isn't going to make you happier.
Exactly right.
Not.
Doesn't make you a winner.
It's just not.
Right.
It's just not.
Right. Exactly right. I always say that. I say, you know, you can go to another restaurant, not go to that restaurant anymore, feel better about it, and still get your food. But you can't do that here. You know,
exactly.
that opportunity is not there for you. So it is a very difficult thing to legislate it or to say, you know, they should do this. I get calls all the time. Why don't they name the players? Why don't they put the players out there? Why don't players apologize more? Where is the shame? And all of it seems to be orchestrated to some degree because they got Players Association to deal with. They got the good of the game to deal with. And really, they're all on one team. You know, everybody that works there is among the best at what they do and is paid accordingly and doesn't really want to rock the boat even though they're disappointed. I thought Steinbrenner's reaction was right the other day. Yeah, I'm really ticked off, but it's in our best interest to look forward because it is in their best interest to look forward. It's the best interest of everybody, but it doesn't make it right.
Now, and the other thing, too, Chris, is that, you know, when you look about the psychology of a sports fan, I think there seems to be a lot of people who are surprised just from the outside. You know, a lot of Knicks fans just start rooting for the Nets. Well, you know, it's not that easy because when you invest yourself as a sports fan, you invest yourself in the not only in the good times you've enjoyed, you know, following this team, but the bad times that have made the good times sweeter, all the institutional knowledge you have of that team. I mean, if you have all this history with the Knicks, just because you'd like the Nets to win again, or we would like the Nets to win instead, that's not going to make you a Nets fan. It's just not. You can't change your heart that easily. It's just not doable, and owners know that.
I tell you, I think we'd agree on one thing, and that is that, and especially for you, because you got to write the columns all the time. We need more big games. You know, we need games that we look forward to, that we rub our hands together and say, Friday night, I can't wait for that game. You know, and we just don't, for the most part, we have not had that in this market. The Yankees have had some big games. The Jets and Giants have had very, very few big games where, you know, they got to win this one. They got to have this one. And it's pretty remarkable to have as many teams as we have and not have those events to look forward to, even if we lose them, even if the home team loses.
And that's the thing. I think when we complain about this era that's kind of like extends back to the Giants' second Super Bowl win, which has just been completely empty except for that Rangers Stanley Cup run and the Mets World Series run.
Right.
They're isolated moments, but that's exactly it. It's this feeling of just one meaningless, you know, venture after another, and it's amazing that you can fill as many football seasons as the Jets and Giants have the last 7 or 8 years with unbelievably meaningless football games because those are supposed to be events even in October, and they're not.
And the leagues, of course, are built so that you can get better fast. See the Niners. See the Chiefs when Reed went over from Philadelphia to Kansas City. It's built so that you don't pick 2-4-6 3 years in a row.
Yeah, and yet somehow, you know, it's true. And it's like you can't as great a venue as the Garden is, you can't invent excitement for a Knicks Magic game where there's no interest.
Yeah.
you know, when there's nothing really, no real stakes on the table. It's just another, you know, gathering of two mediocre teams, you know, one a little less mediocre than the other. And, you know, it's hard to build a sports town on that. You need, you know, that's, you know, as much as anything. I mean, yeah, Boston has won a lot, but even the fact that they've lost a lot of heartbreak, you know, over the last 20 years, you know, that's what kind of makes it so much fun to be a sports fan in Boston right now. It's because, you know, and in the last two decades, is because even when they lose, they're losing big games. They're losing games people care about.
Yeah, and and the anticipation, right? It's like you have a vacation coming in March to the Caribbean. You know, all this time in between now and then is valuable. You're like, oh, 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, you know. So when you're looking forward to something, it has value. And we just don't get enough to look forward to. Hey, good conversation as always. We'll be reading tomorrow, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Thanks, Mike.
Sounds good, Chris. Great talking to you.
There you go. Mike Vaccaro of The Post.